Welcome to St. Louis On the Air. Many of this year's high school graduates are getting ready to leave for college late this summer, transitioning to a new way of life, away from home, friends, and things familiar. They'll have to transition to a lot of brand new experiences. In short, it's a journey into the unknown, and for many, if not most, preparing for the experience is a nervous, even daunting time. I'm Don Marsh. We're going to be talking about preparing for that transition on today's program. Joining me in studio is Dr. David Russell, the Commissioner of Higher Education for the state of Missouri. Jane Donahue is co-chair of St. Louis Graduates High School to College Center and president of the St. Louis Public Schools Foundation. St. Louis Graduates helps high school seniors prepare for the transition to college. Lisa Orton-Zarin is founder and chief executive officer of College Bound, which helps students from under-resourced circumstances prepare for the next step and provides resources after students enter college. A little later, we'll be joined by Daisha Tankins, a student at Harris Stowe, who utilized the St. Louis Graduates program. Folks, thank you so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thank you.
Dr. Russell, let me begin with you very generally. Getting accepted to college may not be the hard part. making that successful transition could be even tougher. What do you think?
Well, by transition, I suppose you're talking about all the hurdles that you have to overcome.
Sure.
That has been the focus of our department over the last 3 years. As you know, there's a lot being said about Missouri's big goal, which is trying to get 60% of all the working age Missourians to have some kind of credential, post-secondary credential. It could be an associate's degree or a bachelor's degree, but the important thing is that the workforce more and more is requiring that we have students coming out of our schools who have those technical capabilities and the ability to think critically to adapt to a rapidly changing economy. So that's kind of important up front. It then is incumbent on us to do everything we can to remove the barriers that prevent our students from going to college, and that could involve student financial aid and making sure there's enough of that to take care of students, particularly those who come from lower economic strata. We need to keep our bright flight students here in the state of Missouri, so it's very important that we focus on state financial aid. But also we want to be sure that they're qualified to do college-level work, and that means making sure that coming out of high school they have the ability to do the mathematics, science, English language skills that will ensure that they're going to be successful.
You know, there was a piece on NPR this morning talking about the need for remedial education for so many of the college freshmen entering these days. So that's part of the equation, too, obviously, if this is a need.
Yes, and it's troubling to me to take note of just how many students fail to get through that first year of college. Many of them are dropping by the wayside, and that's a terrible waste of human talent. So our institutions are actually spending a great deal of time and investing a great deal in changing the way they teach subjects in college so that students who perhaps feel they're not as well prepared to do college-level mathematics are nevertheless given the opportunity to do college-level math and then receive the counseling that they need along the way to help ensure that they're going to be successful. And so we can move them to taking those college courses for credit that they need to actually graduate.
Jane Donahue, what's your take on this whole transition process?
Well, thanks very much. I think the transition can be very daunting, but also it's an exciting time, and I know that we've got people in the community that can support students as they make that transition. Today, we are having an open house for something that St. Louis Graduates created just last year called the High School to College Center. And that really is focused on helping high school students who they've got college acceptance letters, they've got all the intentions, they've bought the sweatshirts, they bought the banners, they're ready to go. We are focused on making sure that those students, and we focus on low-income students who will be the first in their families to attend college, really have what they need to cross this threshold and get to college campuses this fall. So we have created this High School to College Center. I can talk a lot more about it as the hour goes on. But in the community, we know that about 10 to 30% of low-income first-generation high school students are going to have some trouble this summer. Not at all their fault, not due to lack of planning, but just due to various factors in life. And as a community, we want to make sure those students feel welcome and ready to come in and receive the support they need so they can pursue their degrees.
What kind of trouble are we talking about?
Well, it's simple stuff, but if you add it all up, it can be an obstacle. So what happens a lot is students feel like they're pretty much done. They've got their acceptance letter. They may have their financial aid award letter. But there is a lot of sort of paperwork steps, especially for low-income students, that need to be pursued. And they may not be done with all of that now that they've graduated from high school. So they'll be able to come into the center. And they can meet with, we've got about 20 high school counselors, youth development practitioners there waiting to welcome them. Not going to make any kind of judgment on why didn't you do this or what, you haven't filed this piece of paperwork, but really there to help them. Make sure they've got the financial aid package they need in place. Make sure they've made their housing deposits. Make sure they've got a plan for transportation to college. Those things are big, big steps in families' lives, and we're there to support them.
Right. Well, Lisa Zarin, you're dealing with the same basic constituency with your organization, are you not? But I this morning, thanks to you, had a look at a website that you're working with now that really meets a lot of the or answers a lot of the questions that Jane has just raised here. Tell us about that.
Sure. College Bound, with a grant from Michael and Susan Dell Foundation that was very generous, about $750,000, built what we call an online software. If you think of it as an app, that may be able to help. And what it does is work with counselors. There is no way that an online software is going to replace what a counselor provides, that deep social-emotional connection, the complex financial aid. But there are more than 30 tasks that go from very low effort to very high effort that students must do. And many of those things, if they're unaware of, they can through the centers, they can click on Bridget and take a quick survey.
That's the name of the app.
Correct. That is the name. They can click on Bridget, and it will give them a customized path. So it will say, "Hi, Don. Are you planning to go to a 2-year college or a 4-year college?" And when they say 4-year college, if they say that, it will ask them a completely different set of questions that are relevant and personalized to them. It will say, "Are you living on campus?" And if they say yes, then it will ask them questions about housing deposits and roommate choices. However, if they say they're living at home and going to a 2-year college, then they create a completely different task list. And together with the questions is a resource guide and the ability to send a text immediately to, say, Jane, and say, "Jane, I did 5 of these things on my own, but I don't get the 6th one." And Jane can look at exactly the same information that the students are looking at any time of the day. It doesn't have to be during center hours, but they can have a counselor there who can respond. And we know that kids live on their phone and on the internet. And being able to combine the power of, you know, deep human resources with technology is the integration we need.
Jane, I'm sure that sounds pretty good to you. I mean, having a resource like this.
It's fantastic. I think one of the best things about this high school to college center that St. Louis Graduates is incubating is that it's this amazing testimony of the generosity and the innovation that exists in this community. So College Bound's innovation around Bridget is fantastic. But I think and it's nested in all that's taking place at the center. We have donated space from WashU for this center. We're right in the loop. We have generous funders. City Foundation, for example, helped to fund the center this summer. And then we have the wisdom of college counselors that really come from a whole range of fields. So we've got private college counselors, St. Louis Public High School college counselors that work at nonprofits. And so it's this great kind of potluck, if you will, of community response. The other thing I think that is important, and this ties into some of what Bridget will help students learn they need to work on, is the financial aid. Last year, we piloted this center, and more than 50% of the students needed help with financial aid. And so we will have on site a financial aid counselor.
That is the issue of the day when it comes to a college education, Dr. Russell. It's a very, very expensive proposition, and kids and families are going into debt for a generation.
Yes, and so it's very important that they're making the right decisions for them about the college that's going to be right for them. And at the state level, given the fact that our resources are limited, we're interested in establishing a statewide student portal that would allow students anywhere in the state, in rural areas as well as urban, to do many of the things that have just been described to you or are being done in a couple of high schools here with that special software. So what you have here is a grassroots effort in St. Louis that will redound to the benefit of people across the state. As we observe and see how this is going, we learn some lessons from it, and we begin to think about how we can transport this across the entire state and allow more students to take advantage of it.
I'm gathering that it's a lot more complicated to go off to college today than it was a generation ago. Dr. Russell, you're going to agree with that, I suspect. And if it is so, why?
Oh, wow. What a question. Lisa, you have a thought about that?
Well, I do. If you look at the range of students that are going to college, that's one of our first clues of why it's so complicated, because there are different problems for students of privilege than they are for students who are living in poverty, having free and reduced lunch and not having resources in their home. So a child of privilege who is a full-pay student can click I accept, hand in their parents' credit card on an online portal, and be done. A student from a low-income family has to be able to navigate master promissory notes. They have to be able to navigate Stafford loans, private loans, public loans. They have to have access to the internet. They may not have gotten their immunizations from a family doctor. Now they have to submit immunization records, but they've lost contact with the facility or the individual who provided those records. And it's having to have health care. We know how many students from low-income backgrounds don't have health care. They have to have it, and they have to submit it and prove it before they can obtain admission, not admission, but before they can matriculate. So if you have 30 tasks to complete, and many of them are, 50% of them are in that financial aid, and they need very intensive counseling, then that needs to be there for them. But there's also 50% of things that if a family is underbanked, I mean, if they just have to submit a $50 payment, a student who's low income has to figure out how to get to the post office. They have to pay for transportation. They have to, you can understand. I don't need to go on.
Yeah, it's interesting because in my role at St. Louis Public Schools Foundation, we are able to provide some support to graduating seniors who've gotten into college and they need to pay. Before they get their financial aid, there's a set of fees they need to pay, one being a housing deposit. And what I learned was that the faster you pay your housing deposit, the higher up you get in the lottery. So really, if you're a family where you're able to just say, okay, you're going, we're paying the housing deposit, we're set, and the housing deposit's around $200, $250, it's one story. But it's a different story if you have to figure out where you're going to get that $250, and hopefully you'll get a number in the housing lottery that will guarantee you a room. So just different stories.
There's also the issue of the diversity of higher education institutions. We have about 220 colleges and universities in this state when you count your public institutions, your independents, and the proprietary institutions.
Wow.
Scattered all over. There are various forms of delivery. You can go online and get an academic program if you want it. Probably the easiest thing nowadays is to come up with the loan needed to underwrite the cost of that, and there are plenty of people lined up to help you do that. But when it comes to making those essential decisions about the right institution for you, you've got a much more complex environment out there.
Right. It seems like the same old story. Then what has gets, and then what doesn't, don't. We have to take a break now. We'll come back and continue this conversation. We'll bring in another player, if you will, too. Deja Tankins will join us in just a moment. We're talking about the transition from high school to college. There are so many things to consider, as we've been finding out in the first part of this program. We'll continue that conversation in just a moment. We'd love to get you into it, too. If you'd like to have raise questions or concerns that you might have about just the kind of transition that we're talking about, or issues perhaps that you faced when you were making that transition, give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. We'll take an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. If you'd like to send us a tweet, do so at STL on air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We'll be continuing our conversation on the transition from high school to college in just a moment. But first, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. The St. Louis Economic Development Partnership has unveiled its first-ever strategic plan for St. Louis City and St. Louis County. Among the plan's goals are increasing foreign trade and investment and attracting more immigrants to the area. A St. Louis judge today issued a permanent injunction against the so-called Take Back St. Louis initiative. The measure would have asked city voters to prohibit tax breaks for big energy companies such as Peabody. Judge Robert Durker calls the initiative illegal and void on its face. And Illinois lawmakers have resumed deliberations on the state budget. They need to work quickly to find a solution that both chambers can approve before the General Assembly's scheduled adjournment on Saturday. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation about transitioning from high school to college. With me in studio is Dr. David Russell, Commissioner of Higher Education for the State of Missouri. Jane Donahue is co-chair of St. Louis Graduates and president of the St. Louis Public Schools Foundation. Lisa Orden-Zarin is founder and CEO of College Bound. And Deja Tankins is a student at Harris Stowe State University. She joins us by phone. Deja, thanks so much for being with us.
No problem. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Deja, give us some sense of what you found in making the transition from your school to Harris Stowe.
Well, I learned that high school is more of a censored world, and college is more of the real world. I was able to get a little glimpse of what the workforce will look like and how much ability and work and pressure that will be placed on my shoulders once I get into the workplace.
Well, you had to make the transition on it. Once you made it, these are the things that you learned at that point. What about getting there, getting to Harris Stowe, and your help you received from St. Louis Graduates?
Well, prior to going to the center, I was really frustrated. I had my hopes aimed at a college that was quite expensive. However, when I went to the center, I was able to sit down with a financial aid advisor who set me down and gave me insight on my finances. And I just really wasn't sure how financial aid worked prior to me going. And when I utilized the service there, the advisor sat down and talked to me about the Stanford loan and unsubsidized and subsidized, and I was really confused, but it shed some light on my situation.
Stay with us, Deja, but I want to put a question to Jane Donahue here. Is there really any difference in dealing with a student who is going to stay in town, possibly live at home? Deja, do you live at home? Deja, do you?
Yes.
Do you live at home? Are you living with your parents?
No, I was living on campus. But as of now, I am at home.
Okay. Well, back to Jane. Is there a difference now in getting a young person ready for college who is staying in town, living at home, and those that are going away?
I think our goal is to get all students that are headed to post-secondary institutions in that mindset. As Deja referenced, high school's a little bit more structured. When you get onto the post-secondary college campus, a lot more is about you making the right choices and your independence. So while there may not be a difference in terms of packing up and driving off to a dorm room that you're going to move into, there's still a mindset change that needs to take place and a commitment that students need to make to their success on either kind of campus.
Lisa, do you have any thoughts on that?
I think there are substantial obstacles for students matriculating to different schools, and they're different, and they can be Herculean for both. A student who lives at home and perhaps attends community college or Harris Stowe or any college nearby, if they're living at home, they may be called upon to take care of other family members, to continue working above what we know will work for a student to achieve success. On the other hand, a student who has to pack up and move far away from home may have issues of belonging and isolation and travel. So they're both what St. Louis Graduates does that's so great, and all counselors who are in this field, is to understand fit and to provide interventions that a student can internalize and apply to their situation.
Daisha, do you have thoughts on that, about your staying at home as opposed to having gone out of town?
I think that in this particular sense, just staying at home, even though I was in my hometown, however I did live on campus, it's, in a way, it still felt like maybe I was away from home, mm-hmm. because the campus is a world of its own, and sometimes when you stay on campus, you don't really have to leave campus. Of course, you can go and hang out and go to other places, but for me, my experience personally, it was like I knew that my family was accessible, and I knew that I could always come home. However, being on campus was just, it was just in a portal that I could contain myself in, if that makes sense. So I don't think that it's much of a difference, but in another sense, I do think it is a difference. When people travel long distances, their family is not really accessible. And what I mean is that they can't always come home, and they can't always, you know, go back and forth. It's a different experience.
And Dr. Russell, from your point of view, and I'm sure from the ladies at the table as well, the main thing is to go to college, whether it's at home or whether it's 1,000 miles away.
Well, yes, but I've learned that a great many students really don't have a clear understanding of what their career paths are. I don't think we emphasize that quite as much in our high schools as we once did years ago. So it's very important for them to be self-aware, to understand what they're letting themselves in for if they pursue a particular degree in biology or whatever. And so having counselors who can kind of help with the reality check there, so they understand that maybe they don't have all of the preparation they need in order to get off to a fast and successful start once they get to college. Those are all very important issues.
And, of course, if you're not sure as a student what you want to do, it could extend the length of time you have to spend in college, which means more money.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's why you have so many students that are taking as long as 6 and 7 years to get through college. Back a few decades ago, you and I could have made a career choice and started our studies, and then our sophomore, even our junior year, could have changed in midstream and still been able to take in enough credits to finish the new degree that we were seeking. Now, those subjects are so much more complicated, and it's so much more difficult to make those mid-course corrections.
Is there something that colleges and universities could do or should be doing to keep this from happening, because it happens a lot, as you know?
Well, part of the difficulty with that is that students are learning about the world and about career fields once they arrive on campus. So I think it's perfectly natural that many of them would try something out and decide that I'm really not going to be a successful teacher. I need to do something else. And how can I apply the credits that I've earned towards something else in a constructive way, so that perhaps it's not quite as expensive for me? So those are issues they have to deal with in the same way that all adults have to do that.
Daisha, do you have a clear a path in mind?
I am interested in psychology, and I hope that one day after I get my doctorate degree that I could possibly own my own clinic and help families.
Well, you've got a long path ahead of you. You've got a good many years ahead of you, Daisha. You're going to be interning with St. Louis Graduates this summer, as I understand it. What are you going to bring to the table in dealing with some of your contemporaries and peers during that internship?
Well, I feel that I'm very effective with communication, and I am a very relatable person. So I think me being there and helping out can somehow help the students that walk through the door let their guard down and realize we all have somewhat been in this place, in this predicament, and that we can all help each other to make the situation a little bit easier and a little bit less stressful.
What do you think is the biggest mistake that young people make in making that transition from high school to college?
I think people get so frustrated and they give up so easily because during the summer, we're not given the luxury of having the high school counselors that we once had during the school year. So a lot of conflict comes up during the period of graduation up until when the student actually has to arrive on campus. And a lot of people don't even arrive on campus because somewhere in between those two milestones, something has happened and discouraged them and made them turn their back on it.
I think that's called a summer melt, isn't that right? Well, Daisha, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Best of luck to you in your college career and during your summer internship at St. Louis Graduates. Just a second. Before you go, I think Jane wants to say something.
Well, just thanks to Deja. And just one of the things we're doing this year at the High School to College Center is we have a couple other near peers, if you will, like Deja, that went to the center last year, adjusted their college plans, and are successfully in college right now. They're helping us get the word out because we know there are 6,000 low-income high school seniors in our area that may need this assistance. And so we're sort of encouraging them to think about networks and sharing the news about this sort of judge-free and also free place to go for help.
Right. Daisha, once again, thank you and best of luck to you.
Thank you.
Right. I'm going to go to the phone now because Chris, who's been waiting, he's calling from Troy, Missouri, is going to raise an issue that I know, Lisa, you want to talk about. So let's bring Chris into the conversation. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, how you doing today?
Great. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing all right. I was wondering, I always hear all of this stuff on the radio about low-income folks getting them to college, which is great and everything. But I work construction. I've been, the last few years have been very difficult on me and have pretty much ruined my credit. And now that my daughter's going to go to college, we can't even let her stay on campus because we can't afford it. And along with, you know, last year being a decent year, my part of her college after the federal student aid and stuff is going to be $6,000 that I had due in August 1st, and there's another $6,000 due in December. And I know there's loans and stuff available to me, but not really because my credit's shot from the housing downturn. So what do you do for people that aren't destitute or, you know, unemployed or, you know, have a lot of other problems for just us regular folk that work our guts out, but, you know, no one seems to be offering us any help?
Chris, thank you very much. I think you represent an awful lot of people out there. Lisa, why don't you start with this?
Well, Chris, what I want to say is I want to validate both your question and your feeling of, you know, what about me? What about us? It's heartbreaking when anyone wants to pursue a college education and they simply can't because finances aren't available. You know, since I'm not a government agency or a private lender, I can't speak to how legislation is created, but I can say that you're right, it's very unfair. Students who are low income don't get money that covers their full cost of tuition. I think it's really important to understand that they may be funded at a certain level, but they're also typically gapped significant amounts of money. So it's very common for a low-income student for whom they'll get $6,000 in Pell money, but then they're going to have to take out another $6,000 to $10,000 in other loans. And their families also may not be able to be eligible for it. So, you know, Chris, I hear you. This isn't just about low-income students. This is about all students.
You had a comment during the break that I think is worth repeating here, and that's why it's so important that as many people as possible get to go to college.
Yeah, I mean, the impact on our region for every student who is capable of completing college and doesn't get the opportunity to do that is something we should all be passionately concerned about. It isn't just about individual wealth. It's about what money we can it's about our purchasing power for everything from homes at the really high end to being able to support local businesses. This is something that all of us, no matter where you live, what zip code, should be very concerned about.
Because college graduates typically make more money and therefore put more money back into the economy.
Absolutely. And this has been studied over and over again. And there are questions about, is college worth it? We could talk about whether, you know, it depends on how much money you pay and your major. But the bottom line is, if you look at the unemployment stats, they're going to be much, much lower for degree completers than people who have not completed degrees.
Dr. Russell, what would you say to Chris?
Well, I could make the comment that the A-plus program is an attempt to respond to just that kind of need that Chris is talking about, because it allows students, based on their good citizenship in school, their engagement in civic projects throughout the community, getting good scores, enables them to receive an A-plus scholarship to attend a community college nearby. Mm-hmm. It's an excellent way for them to get established, to take care of some of those undergraduate courses that they're going to need no matter where they go. And then after they've gotten their feet under them and they've proven they can do the work, then they can see what they can put together so they can finish their third and fourth years somewhere else if they so choose.
Plus they're saving the big ticket expense, 2 years of the
exactly.
big ticket expense.
Exactly. Yeah.
Jane, did you want to respond to Chris or to what's been said?
I hear his story, and counselors at the center have heard that similar kinds of stories. They're very, very difficult. We had a mom come in last summer. Her son had gotten into a very prestigious art institute, and they were thrilled. It was very exciting for the whole family to have made this accomplishment. But unfortunately, the math didn't work out. And he'd gotten a scholarship, gotten a little bit of aid, but still there was too big of a gap. And so my hat's off to it's mainly Scholarship Foundation financial aid consultants that work with the families to think about what another option that's going to be great, may not be the first option that they thought of, but another option could be, so that families aren't going into huge debt, so that their kids can pursue post-secondary. So it's tough, and the only thing I would say is, there is help. Again, you can come into the High School to College Center. There is help to really navigate some of those conversations. And they're tough family conversations because parents want to do the best possible for their kids.
Yeah. I want to pick up on a couple of these points. We have to take another break. By the way, if you want to stop by the College Center, you can do so today. There's going to be an open house from 3 to 5 this afternoon. The center is at 618 North Skinker. Is that that's the correct address, Jane?
Yep. We're right across from the gas station there, right off of Del Mar, and we officially open on June 2nd. We'll be open through August 1st, Monday through Friday, 10 to 3 p.m., and on Saturdays, 11 to 2 p.m.
And this afternoon, Dr. Russell will be speaking at during the course of that open house, so that's just another reason to want to be there from 3 to 5 this afternoon. Have to take another break. We'll continue the conversation with Dr. David Russell, Jane Donahue, and Lisa Orden-Zarin when we come back, and we'll take more of your calls as well. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We continue our conversation on the transition from high school to college. You know, we've been talking throughout this program primarily about the situation for low-income folks. Who are they? What's the definition? What are the various steps on the ladder in making decisions with regard to the kind of aid that's available, the kind of resources that are available out there? Jane, I suppose you're as well equipped as anyone at the table to talk about that. Who are the people that come to you, and what are the yardsticks you use for helping them?
So St. Louis Graduates is incubating this high school to college center. St. Louis Graduates itself is a network of funders and educators, K through 12, as well as higher ed educators, nonprofit partners like College Bound, all galvanized to helping ensure that low-income students succeed in college.
What is a low-income student? I mean, there's got to be.
We define it by at the high school level, those that are eligible for free and reduced lunch. At the college level, those that are eligible for Pell grants. So we opened the center because last summer we heard from a number of counselors and youth practitioners we worked with. We heard them say, we're worried about the students that we know are going to succeed and we know they're going to graduate and they think they know what they're doing. We're worried about them. We see them at McDonald's in the summer and we're just hoping that they've got all their work done so that they can go on to college. So that was kind of a call to action for us. Well, let's not worry. Let's do something. So we opened this high school to college center. Last summer, 214 kids came. About 50% were from the St. Louis Public Schools. That's probably because we did most of our PR there. Most of them came because they needed help with financial understanding and making a good financial aid plan. They were going to attend a total of 69 different colleges throughout the region. A lot of them were going to be attending community college to start with. Due to a number of factors, including that it's an affordable choice and also the fact that you can do your developmental education there. So those are the kids that come.
But I'm still unclear. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about someone who's eligible for a Pell Grant. What is the eligibility requirement for a Pell Grant? I'm trying to get some sense of who the low-income people are and when you rise above that particular category.
Okay. I don't have the exact numbers on that, but I'm hoping maybe one of my colleagues do.
I mean, it's by numbers of people in the household. But typically, this is families who are making under $30,000 a year, sometimes under $20,000 a year for a household. And then the eligibility goes up. If your income goes up, but you have eight family members that you're supporting, then the scale goes up. But I think here's something I want to offer. If we didn't think of this so much as low income, but as who has a poverty of resources to call upon, I'm sure that anybody who walks into the high school to college center is going to be supported regardless of their income level. But typically, low income and first generation students have a poverty of resources in their home. There is intimidation about higher ed facilities. They don't have a network of aunts, uncles, grandmas, friends over the summer that they can call upon. So having resources available when there is a poverty of network is hugely important. And then, of course, there is the financial piece.
Mm-hmm. Right. Let's go back to the phones. I want to bring Pat in from Eldred, Illinois. Pat's going to raise an issue that I wanted to get to at some point, so let's do it now. Go ahead, Pat.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
Go ahead.
I go to Truman State University in Missouri in Kirksville, and I'm a high-need student from an extremely rural area. And we've been talking a lot about what urban students can do, and I just wonder if there are the same resources or an attempt to provide the same resources for rural students.
Pat, thanks very much for the call. Who would like
Thank
to
you.
Take that? Dr. Russell, is anything you can say to Pat to help him understand this?
Well, I'm not sure I totally understand the question. Certainly in many of our rural areas, it is the community colleges that are providing the transition from college to the workforce. They provide opportunities for students to kind of take things in increments. They can work on certificates that prepare them for certain fields of work out there. And then after a time, they can put those together to create the credits that they need to complete a degree.
I'm guessing that he's wondering if the same kind of resources that you two ladies are talking about are available in the rural areas. Jane?
Well, we do have a call-in number because we know that a lot of the issues that we're talking about that happen in urban environments are exactly the same as in rural. So we have a call-in number that people can use. There is another center opening up in Kansas City that's very similar to this. And I have to say, a number of our counselors that are working with us are from rural school districts. Because they've got the same issues with their kids, and so they've been doing advertising in their communities about the center, and there'll be good resources at the center to help with families in those circumstances.
Lisa, Pat has a point. There are a lot of people in rural areas that have income deficiencies as well.
Absolutely. And I want to say, again, I want to validate that we talk a lot about urban students and our rural students are left hanging and it's not fair and we need to direct more resources to them. That being said, this pilot of Bridget, which has been so generously funded and is being rigorously evaluated, is going to be available to high schools across the country. That's the goal. If the pilots work this summer, then college access organizations, it can be in colleges, it can be in high schools. So before a student walks out the door of his high school or her high school, they will have, the counselors will know exactly the obstacles they face. And it's able to be ubiquitous. So they don't have to be located in a city or in a proximity that you can drive to, which would be great if we could do that. But from an economic point of view, this allows students to be served as well.
You know, I was on that site, as I said this morning. It's very slick. It's very well managed, it seems to me. Back to the phones. Mary in St. Louis, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm wondering if local companies or companies in general ever subsidize, entry-level employees' higher education anymore. To say that I benefited from that 30 years ago is an understatement. I didn't know who I was, didn't know what I wanted to do, and I was fortunate to get in as a, basically clerical level, and then my education was 75% subsidized as long as I passed, and it seems like such a huge thing for people who lack either resources or self-awareness coming out of high school. Does anybody do that anymore, subsidized education?
Mary, thanks so much. Dr. Russell, let me start with you on that.
Well, we're coming back around to that. I think business is beginning to partner with higher education more than it ever has before. An example is the Missouri Innovation Campus concept, which was first started at the University of Central Missouri in connection with the Lee Summit School District, the local community college, and local businesses. And what they have come up with is a hybrid kind of educational experience that allows high school students to begin to work on their college credit and then at certain times switch over to internships with companies that would very much like to hire them. Somewhere down the road and gives them practical experience in things like information technology so that when they graduate from high school, they also have completed a two-year associate's degree and they have workforce experience already.
And it is in the best interest of companies to have a better educated pool of potential employees.
Absolutely, and they'll tell you here in St. Louis that we can't produce enough students in these kinds of situations to satisfy their demand.
Before the ladies respond, is this where we're going in education today? I mean, the resources, the amount of resources available seems to be shrinking. Is this where we're going to have to go, that private enterprise is going to have to get into the act in a much bigger way?
I personally think so because the handwriting's on the wall. Government is no longer able to step in and provide all of the resources that our citizens need to get where they want to go. You have to have those kinds of partnerships and liaisons with the private sector if you're going to be successful.
Right. Any thoughts on this, Jane and Lisa?
I would just say that we're lucky enough to have the regional chamber here in St. Louis focusing on this issue and working with companies to think about how to promote adult learners, many of whom have started college but not finished their degrees. What are the policies, both tuition and then just in terms of workforce policies, that corporations can put into place to help more adults finish their degrees?
Lisa, a thought?
I look forward to there being a much more aggressive push from our private sector to support all students who are college intending. And it means that we're going to have to look at making a financial investment to do that. We can't cherry pick among students who are just, at the top of the ladder. And we have to look at look, if the Regional Commerce and Growth Association has said that if we can increase degree completion by 1%, it will have a $1 billion impact on our community. The people who have to participate in that degree completion are across the income sector.
Very quickly, I have a call here that time is running out, and I won't take the call, but I'll ask the question I think the caller has. Jane, how many students did you help last year?
High School to College Center served 214.
And Lisa?
Well, Bridget actually was just launched this May. So we are at over 2,000 students in about 10 days.
I'll just remind the audience once again that Bridget is an online app, if right. you will. It's not someone sitting in their office someplace.
Bridget is very
willing
busy.
To help.
But Bridget is connected to counselors. So in other words, those 2,000 students are all connected to counselors, and that was in about 10 days.
All right. Let's take another call. Dennis joins us from Overland. Dennis, go ahead.
Yeah, I was thinking, I've had this thought for quite some time. AmeriCorps, I think, is still in existence, and I would think it would be really wonderful to take students that are maybe not quite ready to go to college or are in the situations that you're in and have them work in the elementary schools or maybe ride the buses. And while they're doing this, be taking some of the courses that quite often knock kids out of college at that time, and over a period of a year, maybe two, they get themselves ready and make a little bit of impact in their community. And so it's kind of a win-win because school districts are all under pressure for hardly anybody rides the bus other than the school bus driver. So maybe a kid that's just right out of high school and they're in an elementary school situation would be just good for everybody.
Dennis,
so.
Thanks for the call. Thoughts?
Okay.
Anyone want to comment on the comment?
AmeriCorps is, one of our treasures. College Bound, along with Wyman and many other organizations in the area, use AmeriCorps. I'm not sure exactly what our caller has in mind in terms of an intervention, but yay, AmeriCorps.
Yeah.
Is AmeriCorps being funded as it once was? Seems to me that we've been reading that it's suffering the same plight as most institutions.
Yeah, they're still being very successful. They're still out there, but certainly they're having to struggle to meet the need. I might mention that the College Advising Corps has teamed up with the Department of Higher Education to provide opportunities for students to work on their applications to college. If you don't get that first step and get them to fill out that application, you're never going to get anywhere. This past year, we did a pilot in 26 high schools, many of them here in St. Louis. We had 2,000 students participate. They submitted 3,600 applications. This year, we're doubling the number of high schools, doubling the number of students that will apply.
2 minutes left, and along these very same lines, we've talked a lot about having some sense of what your career path ought to be by the time you get to college. Many students don't. But this Facebook comment or question from Laura says, does St. Louis graduates give career tests to determine career choices?
We don't. We certainly can refer people to the counselors that give those kinds of tests, but no, that isn't anything we administer.
How about your organization, Lisa?
Yes, we start career counseling in 10th grade, but most of the career counseling happens in the high schools and in families who talk about what their jobs are around the dinner table. And if that isn't happening, then we have to make it available at our high schools, through our access organizations, through our youth development organizations, and through people like you, Don, who are talking about this.
Yeah, well, I would advocate that, just working within the St. Louis Public Schools, the best assessment starts with exposure. So making sure we're letting kids get exposed to all sorts of careers is our first job.
Okay, a minute left. The key question of the day. How do you pick the perfect roommate?
You know yourself, and you fill out the form honestly. And if you are messy and it says, what kind of roommate do you want, don't write in about the ideal person you imagine yourself to be.
But it is a big question.
And figure that you're only going to have to live with that decision for maybe a semester, and then you have that opportunity to make some adjustments for the next semester.
Do many people do that? Many students do that?
Well, yes, I think they do. When I first went to college, I was rooming with a Connecticut Yankee who had no idea what he was doing when he came to Arkansas to go to school. And by semester's end, he was out of there.
A Connecticut Yankee in Arkansas. Huh?
That's
okay.
Right.
Well, I want to thank you all so much for being with us. I hope we provided some information that will be useful, and I'm sure that we have, to those people out there in that transition period or soon to be in it. A reminder that once again that St. Louis Graduates High School to College Center has an open house this afternoon from 3 to 5. The office is over at 618 North Skinker Boulevard. As Jane Donahue has told us, it's across from the gas station. Maybe that'll help you find
it more
recently.
It used to be the nuisance abatement vehicle that we were across. So.
All right. 618 North Skinker Boulevard. Jane Donahue, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Lisa Zorn, thank you for being there. And thank you so much for being with us. And Dr. David Russell, thank you for coming in. And folks, I'll remind everyone that you'll be speaking at that open house this afternoon. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, as Hillary Clinton's status as a possible presidential contender rises, we'll talk about the role of women in public life and politics. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.